Welcome back, everybody. Hi, my name's Martin Woodward again. I've used all my good jokes this morning, so this one will probably be a bit dry, but there we go. We'll see how we go. No more talk about wire, I promise. I see you've emptied the room. They're not interested in another conversation about it. So let's talk about being agile across technology borders. What happened there? Okay, vielen Dank. Auf Wiedersehen. Yeah. Thank you. I like to try and... Okay, let's use the old-fashioned way. It's fine. We're good. I'm fine. I'll do it with spacebar. Yeah, it's fine. Thank you. Okay, let's start again. Hi, my name's Martin Woodward. This is the slightly longer version of my being agile across technology borders talk. Here's how to get hold of me. Thanks for the abuse earlier on Twitter. I'll respond to some of that and keep it coming. It's always good. Books, blah, blah, blah. Okay, there we go. Available from all good bookstores. As I mentioned this morning, I live in Northern Ireland. I work at home generally because I work with Americans, and so they, you know, in the morning is fantastic because I have the day to myself. So in the morning, I get work done, I catch up on email, I do what I want to do. In the afternoon, I kind of have to talk to the Americans a little bit. And then in the evenings, it's fantastic because I can do meetings I want to do because I work at home, but I have the best excuse in the whole world for saying no to boring meetings. So if you want to be productive in Microsoft, I highly recommend positioning yourself over 6,000 miles away from your product group. They do give me a desk in Northern Ireland, so I work at home, but you know, Microsoft is, you know, you get... When you're a certain level, you get, you know, you get a desk with a window, and when you're a certain level, you get a car and things. It's a big company. All that sort of thing happens. So I do have a desk. That's where my desk is there, just in the corner of this building. This building, as you see, you know, I showed you my view this morning with rainbows and green fields. You can see why I don't go to my desk very often. It's in kind of an industrial area. This is now the Titanic Museum in Belfast. If you're ever in Belfast, I recommend you come and check that out. And has anyone watched Game of Thrones? Yeah, that's where Game of Thrones is filmed. That's the actual studio, and there's massive soundstage where they film all the interior sequences. And you'll be amazed, you know, one day it's like a tropical thing inside, and another day it's really cold. But yeah, that's where they film it. And that's the Titanic Museum. That's the Titanic Studios, where they film Game of Thrones. And don't let this worry you, that's where we build TFS. And this hole here, that's where we built the Titanic. It was fine when we last touched it, is what I like to say. It worked fine on my machine. Yeah. I'm English, living in Ireland, and the expression, I say it was fine when we last touched it. In Ireland, they like to say it was built by Irishmen, driven by an Englishman. So there you go. The problem we have when we're building cross-platform applications and the challenge that we have is the customers don't care how something's implemented. You know, when if you go to a checkout in the supermarket, you don't care that the purchasing system that's handling, you know, that's scanning is based on Windows Embedded, that's feeding data into a Oracle database that's got some Java middleware running on top of it, that's got an SAP system doing some things and dynamic system doing some things. You don't care. You just want cornflakes and milk for breakfast. And when you have requirements, often those requirements span technology boundaries. I used to have a real job before I came to work for Microsoft. And one of the things I was involved in was a major airline. And this particular airline had, a seat reservation system, which is sort of based, Amadeus is the most common one used in the airline industry, and that's a lot of assembly on a Z series mainframe. And then you have the loyalty program for the airline, which was typically done more recently, and so is often like the client server era kind of thing, and is a SQL database with some front end code I once accidentally deleted everybody's loyalty points for this particular airline because I ran a query a bit wrong once. But never mind, you all got your points back, so don't blame me. And it also has other systems. And we wanted to build something that was we wanted to, while we were selling you a flight, also offer to sell you a hotel and sell you some car, you know, while you're in making that purchasing choice. The flight selling system, back-ended by a mainframe, the car reservation system was some bizarro, like, interface off to some weird system. I can't even remember what it was now, but it was, you know, bizarro, random, precursor to XML type language. And then the hotel system that we had was a brand new system. That part was built in Java, and then the loyalty scheme was built in .NET. And we had to get all these systems to talk together. And then when we wanted to deliver a new feature, you know, making it so that we upsell, that actually involves talking across multiple technology boundaries. If a feature has arrived, if we needed to introduce a new taxation system, that that requirement spread across technology boundaries. So as an organization, you need to know what's happening with your IT systems across technology boundaries. And the problem we have as developers is that we tend to silo. You know, we specialize. I'm a .NET developer, I'm a Java developer, I'm an Android developer. We get ourselves into little niches, and we have a habit for our infrastructure to also be siloed. And that's bad. We need to break down the silos and share the information across the teams and have a single source of truth across the teams as to where your development is. So this talk is about trying to have a single source of the truth, but also a system that's open and engaged across the whole application development lifecycle. If we look at the application development lifecycle, you've probably seen this diagram from us many times, you know, with the little loops and the iterations and blah blah blah. It's you're in development, so you're over here focusing on developing software, and then you need to deploy, and then you need to go to production, and then requirements. When I first came to Microsoft 5 years ago, I brought the Eclipse and cross-platform development story into TFS. So that's how I came into the company. And I used to do, you know, hour-long, 90-minute-long talks that were just on this tiny little bit here, because that's what we had, you know? And that's all we talked about, because that's what we were doing. This, I don't know if you noticed, Microsoft's changing. Hopefully you feel for the better. It certainly is a very exciting time and a great time to work for the company. Having support for all developers, having support for everybody across the application development cycle is a key requirement of each team. The cross-platform work isn't just siloed into one little team anymore. It's as a second, you know, let's go do cross-platform after we've got it working. It's part of every single team. Let's make sure it works for everybody. Let's make sure we can collaborate. Our ALM products, Visual Studio and Team Foundation Server, they're collaboration products. Collaboration doesn't work if you don't talk to somebody. Everybody needs to talk together to be able to collaborate. And that's why you'll actually find, in general, all Microsoft collaboration products have really good, you know, cross-platform stuff. Like Skype, for example, has a really good client across all, has an equally good client across all platforms, should we say like that. Link on the Mac is amazingly good. Our collaboration products are very strong for cross-platform because you need to be to collaborate. So let's go around that loop a few times. So let's talk about the develop cycle, first of all, which is where I'm most at home. So we provide a comprehensive application lifecycle management offering with Team Foundation Server on-premise or Visual Studio Online in the cloud. And that provides a core set of features and functionality, you know, planning, work item tracking, source control, both Git or Team Foundation version control, build automation, test case management, requirements management, release management. You know, I can't even fit it on the slide nowadays, all the features that's provided in a core platform. around that core platform, you get to provide your process, your Scrum, Agile, my version of Scrum, my version of Agile, my version of whatever process we want to follow. And then you can access that core offering from where your developers are, from Eclipse, from IntelliJ, from Visual Studio, from Xcode, from wherever you need to be, from the command line shell. And then we have all these clients that come in and talk in to our ALM products. And then, you know, this is obviously Eclipse. The key is when we're building experiences for developers, they have to be native to where the developers are. They have to make sense in the whole space. So our Eclipse integration doesn't make Eclipse look like Visual Studio. It isn't Microsoft Visual Studio for Eclipse. It's Eclipse with the TFS plugin. When you connect to TFS, you get work items, you get source code, you get builds, you get access to SharePoint, you know, but it's all just Eclipse. So if you're an Eclipse developer using Eclipse, you know what you're doing. If you're an Xcode developer, it's just all the same things you were doing. We're just in the back end storing all that data away to allow you to collaborate with the rest of your team. That's on Linux. The key for the Eclipse stuff is it is actually, you know, it's actually a proper Eclipse plugin. I come from the Eclipse community. It's I like to say 100% Java. It's 99.959 Java. There is a little bit of C code in there because we do some cool stuff that you can't do in Java. So we write that in C. And we use what's called JNI, so Java Native Interface, to hook into Java. So we do things like we hook into Kerberos authentication on Linux. So if you want to do single sign-on with your TFS server in a Linux environment, then we support that from AIX and from, you know, Spark and things. So there are cases where we do cool stuff. Originally, in Java 4, which is, I've been doing it that long, but Java 4 was the hotness when I started coding. In Java 4, you could set a file. Let me get this right. It might be Java 4, Java. You can make a file read-only, but you couldn't make it writable. One of the two. I was like, well, that's a lot of use. So in Team Foundation version control, in a Team Foundation version control server workspace, when you get files locally, until you check them out, they're read-only locally, and then they have to get set writable. So just to be able to do that, we had to write some JNI code. But hey, that's what I actually enjoy, that sort of stuff. So that's why I enjoyed working on the product. And obviously, we have a command line client for the Mac for Team Foundation version control. So if you want to use centralized version control, we support that. If you've got, we support everything like symlinks, execute bits. So if you're on a Unix file system, you know, they have execute bit permissions. We recognize all that data. TFS has all those capabilities of storing all that information in it, even though it's been built by Microsoft. You know, it doesn't ignore Unix file systems. It can work with Unix and then TFS. In fact, the performance on some of those file systems can be faster. It's interesting. There are interesting things that sometimes happen because the priorities of features can be different. So, for example, if you're in the cross-platform, if you're in a command line shell, you're SSH to a Unix box, and you're trying to check in into version control, and you want to associate with a work item, how do you do that? Well, in the version of the command line that runs on Windows, when you go to check in, it'll pop up a dialog box and allow you to click on the work item. Well, that's no good to you when you're on SSH talking to Linux. So we have the ability to pass in the command line which work item you're associating a commit with, a check-in with, which is great and is a good feature and very valid for the command line folks. You wouldn't believe the number of complaints I get from people running on Windows that they really want that feature because they want to automate it as part of the build process or something like that. So we actually have some people who will take the Java command line client and run it in a Windows build system just because it's got some features in it that the .NET one didn't have. But anyway, sorry about that. We'll get there. We'll get parity eventually. But at least it's the Java client that has more features than the .NET client. I suppose it would be worse if it was the way around. Team Explorer Everywhere is our product for talking to Team Foundation Server or Visual Studio Online. It's Team Explorer, but everywhere. So it's the same Team Explorer you see in Visual Studio, just everywhere. It comes with a command line client and a plugin for Eclipse. The plugin for Eclipse brings with it Team Foundation version control support, TFVC support. So it allows you to work with centralized version control. And as I mentioned, there's a small amount of native code. All of the stuff that we use to talk to TFS, all this code here with a dotted box around it, we actually make that available as a Java SDK. So just like we make all our APIs that are .NET APIs that Visual Studio uses to talk to TFS, we make those publicly available to you to use in your applications. We make the Java SDK available for you to use and include in your applications and distribute. So you can write Java applications that talk to TFS just fine, and we have people that do that commercially as well as, you know, internal integrations. When we were building the Git integration into Eclipse, we didn't go re-implement Git in Eclipse. Because you know what? Eclipse has a great Git community already with a thing called eGit, and a thing called which is based on JGit, which is the core library underneath. So we just made sure we worked really well, and we've had to fix a couple of bugs to enable things like single sign-on authentication inside of Windows. But apart from that, if you're using Git in Eclipse, when you connect to a team project, we just pull you into an eGit-based project in Eclipse. We're not rebuilding that. And that's deliberate, because we want the people who are using Git in Eclipse to just feel like they're using Git in Eclipse. They just happen to push, you know, where they just happen to push to a server which you tell them to go to, which is TFS. I mentioned that you can have both Git and Team Foundation version control projects in the same server. That's how it's set up. So it's a decision you make at the project level. You can move code between the two using a Java-based open source application we have called GitTF, which allow you to move code between Git and Team Foundation version control, excuse me. But that's typically what we find, though, is rather than code flowing between projects that way, we actually find work items are linked between projects. So the people who are working in a Git repository would link to another repository where maybe the requirements are stored, and maybe that's a Team Foundation version control-based project. One of the key reasons why we went to Git for distributed version control rather than building our own or making TFVC have a distributed version control mode was for the cross-platform user. Rather than having to go, you know, convince them to use this thing by Microsoft, you know, you can just say, hey, just use Git and publish to this project for me, please. By publishing to this project, I will give you backups from SQL. So I'm just taking SQL backups, and that takes a backup of the Git repository, which synchronizes with the backup I'm taking of your work items and test cases, because that's how TFS works. I'm giving you Active Directory integration with Git. So your access to Git is being controlled by Access Directory group membership, again, because we're enterprise, you know, friendly Git. I'm giving you control over your branches. So if one team tries to push a branch that belongs to another team, well, you can do that locally and edit that way. The server will say, hey, you're not allowed to push here. You know, you need to push to a different branch. Would you like to do a pull request? So we have all these enterprise-friendly Git features, but it is just Git in the client. It's just Git. And if you're accessing from Xcode, if you're talking to Team Foundation server, you just use all of the same Git tooling you use in Xcode. You edit files, you push those changes, it just works. It's just Git. So when you push those changes, you push those changes. The command line, we couldn't resist slipping a quick joke in. So when you do your first pull ever in a new command line on Unix, we put a nice little logo for you in your console. Because I could. I'm a PM, so this is about the only code I was allowed to check in the whole time in that release cycle. So it took me ages to do that. If you notice, the logo is made of T's and F's and S's. Oh. It took so long to do. Okay, and that went through loads of, committees and, yeah, anyway. On the build side, if you're wanting to get your team to standardize on Team Foundation Server or Visual Studio Online, you can have a couple of arguments. One argument you can quite often have is, ooh, I don't want to use that version control system of Microsoft's. You know, that's going to be disruptive to me. Would you like to use Git? Yes. You get that answer both from the people that are already using Git and from the people on your team that are using Subversion who really wanted an excuse to move to Git anyway. Now you've just given them one. Woohoo! That makes it a very easy sell for you now to help them standardize on TFS. Would you like to use Git for version control? Yep. Is that disruptive to you? No, I know how to use Git, or I think I know how to use Git, and I really want to learn how to use Git, so this is a good thing to do. No problem at all. Work items, people are generally very fine with going to web for work items. We provide rich work item client right inside the IDE in Eclipse if you want it. But the web client for work items is hugely improved and very powerful now. And we find lots of cross-platform developers just fire up Chrome or Safari and go to the web and do that for work items. Builds can be a disruptive thing. People are always frightened of their build system. It kind of works. We kind of, would like to invest some more in it, but, it's a bit scary and we're busy building code all the time. And, sometimes, the guy who got it set up's now left the company and I'm a bit scared about touching it. There's always friction if you tell them to move a build system. We support Java builds in TFS forever. Since TFS 2008, I think. If you do a build, you can do a build of a Java, of an Ant or a Maven project in TFS on Windows today, and it just works. We have all that available to you. In Visual Studio Online, we have a cloud-hosted build service. Have you seen that? So you can do a build in the cloud. Those build agents all have Java, have the latest Oracle JDK installed on them, ready, along with Ant and Maven. Just in case you want to build a Java project, we have all those things there available for you already. So you can do that. However, builds are disruptive. We realize that. So we also make sure that we've got support in Jenkins. We've got support in Cruise Control. We've got support in TeamCity. All of these common build servers all talk to Team Foundation Server. Again, it's no good being a collaboration product if you're not open and have APIs that people can use conventions that the rest of the industry is using to enable you to be able to plug and play bits of systems rather than having to adopt something in a big bang. You want to be able to move gradually, which is why we have a very open system. Did anybody go to the session about the vNext version of build? Did you see that one? Okay, yeah. The vNext version of build has been built with cross-platform build as a key requirement from day one. By that, I mean being able to run the same build server on Linux and Mac OS, and we have it running on a Raspberry Pi in the lab. It's just the same build server. And it's been built so that it's accessible to developers regardless of which platform they're on. So that's one of the key motivations for getting rid of the workflow editor as an editing experience. Was if you tell a Linux guy on the command line to go edit, XAML workflow, good luck. But if you tell them here's a website you can go to, configure some stuff, and here's some JSON you can go edit values in, everybody's happy. So the next version of the build system comes out of the box, obviously with MS Build and Posh, so PowerShell support and things like that. But out of the box, it comes with Ant support, Maven support, Gradle support, which is quite common in the Java community now, Xcode build, which is the command line build to Xcode for the Mac, for iOS builds, execute a shell script for me, all these things come out of the box, as I say. And this is just how we do things nowadays. This open system extends not just to the build, but across the whole of Visual Studio Online and is being improved in TFS. So in TFS 2013, there are some REST APIs which make it easier to talk to TFS if you're not in Java or you're not in .NET, it was quite hard to talk to TFS because the APIs were all SOAP-based. But by going to a simple REST-based interfaces, You can use our SDKs if you're in Java or if you're in .NET, but if you're in, you know, Ruby or Rails or Go or whatever the next new hot languages are, I don't know, whatever it is, you can use the REST interface very, very easily. And so we have all these APIs available to you. We also make use of a thing called a webhook. So you know TFS has always had this powerful eventing mechanism. So if you do something to TFS, TFS raises an event. That's how bits of TFS talk to each other. So if you check in some code, an event gets raised. You can subscribe to those events in TFS 2013 and TFS 2012, but to subscribe to those events, you have to register a SOAP endpoint that TFS will go out and talk to. And then if your system isn't available when TFS is trying to talk to it, then sorry, you know, I tried, kind of thing. In TFS 2015, and it's already available in Visual Studio Online, we have webhooks. Webhooks are a pluggable mechanism for connecting systems together. So it sends a JSON message over the web, and it will retry that same JSON message, you know, for a set number of times in an attempt to deliver that message for you. So you can, by using webhooks and using things like Zapier, you can actually, and if this, then that, and all these cool web 3.0 type platforms, you can assemble workflows together of, you know, loads of different components from loads of different vendors and just integrate them all together just out of the box, and it just works. So we're showing some there. You can have it. So if you do a build to Git hosted on GitHub, not even hosted on TFVC, on TFS, but if you push a Git change to a GitHub repository because you're working on a bit of open source, for example, you can make that trigger a build over in Visual Studio Online, and then the results of that build could then send a message to Atlassian HipChat. You know, we have like, this is all, it's like cats and dogs living together, you know? All this is interconnected. Again, because we're a collaboration platform, we have to do this to be we have to be able to collaborate. It's part of what we do. We are a very open ALM system. And then this helps you get to the point where you have a single source of the truth about your development environment for everybody in your development environment, for your Java teams, you know, for the iOS guys, everybody. You need to know what's happening. Has my requirement been met? Am I going to be delivering this feature on time when I need it? Are all the different technologies reporting up together, making sense? So that's why standardizing on Team Foundation Server and Visual Studio Online really helps you get that picture across your entire organization. Okay, let's look at the next phase. So from developing our software solution, what do we need to do next? Well, we need to go deploy it somewhere. Now, we showed you the release management stuff, and you can, again, this is just amazing to me. I used to be the only talk in a track like this about cross-platform, and in a conference about this. You know, I would be the cross-platform talk. Now we have a whole track. It's amazing. So anyway, requirements management. You can on-premise deploy using requirements management to, you know, WebLogic or whatever, you know, application server you want. Often a deploy step in a Java environment is literally SSH copying or copying an archive file over to a share somewhere, which then auto-deploys out. But what about running those workloads in the cloud, which we like to talk about? So Microsoft, again, we don't talk about this enough, really. We have all this stuff, but I don't know. We just don't seem to tell many people about it. So this stuff's existed for years. You can run Java workloads on Azure, just great. You can go to the gallery and bring up a Linux VM running Java, or a Windows Server VM running Java, Oracle Java. You can bring up a VM running, you know, loads of different application servers and technologies and operating systems under the hood. That's if you want infrastructure as a service. You can, from Microsoft, buy a copy of Oracle WebLogic, or lease, rent a copy of Oracle WebLogic that's running out in the cloud and that we maintain and we, you know, we up and run for you. But you can buy that from Microsoft. Again, what's going on? This is like not how it should work. So we've got the Oracle partnership, and we've got a partnership with loads of different vendors to get their VMs, their machines in Azure. We also offer platform as a service for Java. Java is, you know, Java's one of those special case environments. It's almost it's a peer alongside .NET in terms of the services we offer. So you can have a Java web role. You can have a Java website. You know, all these platform as a service type functionality that Azure provide, you can make use of that as well from Java applications. And you can use their Java SDKs. We've got SDKs for other languages as well, like iOS. But you can deploy that. We also have for building a PaaS application. You know, we have tooling in Visual Studio where you go, you know, give me a new Azure website. We have that same tooling in Eclipse and in IntelliJ as well. So you can just go, give me a new Azure website, and off you go and deploy it. And then finally, we have plugins into Jenkins and Hudson and, you know, the common Travis and things like that, the common build systems to actually be able to, as a post-build step, be able to deploy that application out. So just to recap the virtual machines, there's come with licenses that are certified for production use, things like WebLogic and WebSphere. You know, all the stuff that you use, you can go get from Microsoft. You can get a DB2 license in Azure. What's that all about? So, yeah, I love working for this company now. Web and worker roles from Eclipse, you can just go create these. You can go deploy them. We provide OpenJDK out in our platform as a service. Under the hood, we're actually doing some optimizations to the JDK to make it run really, 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 really fast in Azure. That's why you're deploying to an OpenJDK target, because it's actually kind of a, you know, it's a optimized for Azure version of Java that runs in the cloud. Or you can, if you want, you can bring your own JVM. You know, if you're worried about running against our JVM or the JVM that's installed up in Azure, you can run against your own provided, you know, maybe you've got JRocket or your IBM's JVM, you can run against those. If you want to bring those along and provide licenses, you're more than welcome. So here's the Azure toolkit for Eclipse. As I say, it's Eclipse native, so it's just and it makes sense to Java people. There's no point in Eclipse giving you the offer to go and create an ASP.NET web worker role. Like, well, that doesn't make sense. But create a Jetty role or a Tomcat role, that makes sense to me in Eclipse. So I can do those roles. I can configure everything that you go, you know, you normally see yourself doing over in Visual Studio World. And all these do is they just create the, you know, the deployment files inside Azure deployments that configure those. So we just have all the same UI you expect to see in Visual Studio, really. And it has all the features you would hope to have, basically. It's quite mature. It's been going around for years. The Eclipse plugin is very mature. We see an interesting, so the Java community, as you guys probably know, is quite different to the .NET community. In .NET, everybody's using Visual Studio, really. You know, you got some mono people and some, you know, OmniSharp people and things like that, but the vast majority kind of use .NET in a team. In Java, I used to work in Java teams, it was quite common for everybody in the team to have a different IDE, you know? There's a lot more mix there. We see a lot of developers, a lot of enterprises standardize on Eclipse and Eclipse-based tools, but a lot of individual developers might decide to use IntelliJ for them or a small team. IntelliJ is a really good IDE. I personally like it a lot. So we are supporting those guys as well, even though between Visual Studio and Eclipse, that's about 80-odd% of the market share of IDEs. IntelliJ is, you know, a good chunk of Java people. So we want to go help those people. So we have an IntelliJ plugin for Azure, which we're working on. It's not as mature as the Eclipse one today. The Eclipse one's basically, you know, almost parity to Visual Studio. But it's there and it's created and we're improving on it. It's fully open source. And then it allows you to do all that same Azure stuff, but from IntelliJ. Just to give you an idea on roadmap as well, we also do plan on bringing, there is an IntelliJ plugin for Team Foundation version control, but there isn't an IntelliJ, which JetBrains provide, but there isn't a plugin for access to Team Explorer. So one of the things that we are looking to do in the future, I don't know when this will arrive yet, so don't hold me to it, but we are definitely looking at bringing Team Explorer into IntelliJ as well, because we see customers asking for that. And personally, I quite like IntelliJ, so that was a big factor to it as well. With Azure Websites, you can deploy to, normally it's a 32-bit JVM, but you can get 64-bit if you want to. And basically, when you're configuring, you create the website like you create any other website, and then you get to specify which technologies you want, and that's where you switch on things like PHP, if that's what you want. You switch on Java and switch the, you know, switch PHP and .NET off so it doesn't interfere, and you've got a Java website. It just works. And then in our gallery, we also have, you know, like Tomcat and things like that, or you can bring your own if you want to as well. So that's deploying out to Azure. We have the cloud side. As I say, the on-premise side, it's already there. You've already got your Java infrastructure in place. We don't need to provide you that in the cloud. So keep on using that. Keep buying those Oracle WebLogic licenses or IBM WebSphere licenses. We're not getting in the application server game at all. That's not our game. We just need to make sure your development teams can talk to each other and you can deploy to those. And you can do that just fine on-premise. But we needed to enable it for Azure. So the next part I wanted to talk about was application insights. Has anybody seen any of the application insights sessions that are here this week? Okay, we've got a few. Not too many. Okay, excuse me. Application insights, it's inspired by something Microsoft do every day. You know when you install an application and it says, would you like to help the Microsoft Customer Experience Program? And hopefully you say yes, because you're like cool people. And most people say no, but you know, a statistically relevant percentage of people say yes to, I would like to improve customer experience. That sends us anonymized analytics back to Microsoft, so we can see who's using what features, you know, which parts of the products are getting used. It's telemetry. Application insights is that telemetry productized, is a way of you getting data about the use of your applications out in the world. The way Application Insights works is you have the little bit of code inside your applications that you deploy, which then talks to a cloud service. And it is a cloud service that it talks to send the data about usage of your application. And then you then talk to that cloud service to say, hey, tell me the usage over time. Tell me which operating systems people are on. Tell me how many people have used this particular feature I've delivered. So that's a whole new kind of business we've got into and is very, very valuable. And we use Application Insights a lot. If you've used, you know, some of the Office applications on Windows Phone and Android and iPhone and things, they're using Application Insights to send back data. You know, we use Application Insights in a lot of places inside Microsoft. So it scales crazy well. And you can use it in mobile applications, in rich client applications deployed everywhere, in the web, and it sends all that data back up and analyzes it in the cloud and then uses the power of the cloud to give you some really good searching capabilities and really good drill down, because it can scale all that indexing out to massive numbers of computers. It gives you this real-time view of actually what's happening with your application. You can get alerts. I have personal websites that I've set. I have a podcast, Radio TFS. It's running out in Azure. If I get an alert if a part of the world can't access my website for some reason, normally when it happens, some DNS problems happened, or I promised I wouldn't mention wires again, but anyway, sometimes a trawler will go along and accidentally rip a cable up and then cuts off an entire continent. So if those things happen, we detect them in Application Insights and then let you know outside in if your application's being accessible, as well as inside out, what's actually happening inside my application. And this enables you to do build, measure, learn. The way Application Insights is configured, again, are you noticing a trend here? We have an Eclipse plugin for the Java people, and we have IntelliJ integration. So you go in and you configure it, and it knows about Java. It's got very deep insights into the JDK and into how web applications work, and will help you instrument typical Java applications, as well as helping you instrument Android applications, and there is a comparable framework for iOS as well, as well as obviously Windows Phone and any .NET application. And when you configure that, it starts to send usage data to your console, which is in the cloud. So your applications can all be installed on-prem, but the key with Application Insights is that it is a cloud-based endpoint and a cloud-based console to view things deliberately. Right now, it's not an on-premise thing. But your products can be on-premise products. So, and it goes in, and this is an example of just, you know, putting insights on the basic Java Pet Store app and getting all the information through about which pages are being accessed. That's easy to do. You can just add usage statistics to any web page. It's just a web page, you know. But you can also get deep analytics into which controllers you're actually calling, and actually drill into where, you know, which controller is taking the most time or is getting the most executions. Why is it taking a lot of time? What's the SQL, what SQL's being executed to actually cause it to take so much time? You can actually go in and really do almost like static analysis. It's not static analysis, but deep analysis into what's happening with your application. And you can, as I say, drill into that. So that's the release side. I wanted to talk a little bit about the future. Where are we going? Now, I work on the TFS team, the Visual Studio Online team. So we're making future investments everywhere. We're making future investments in Application Insights. We're making future investments in Azure. We're making investments everywhere. Basically, every team in Microsoft, I don't know if you've noticed, cares about everybody nowadays. I can only really talk about the stuff I'm building because that's all I know about. I can't really talk about the plans that other teams are. So this is specifically about what my team are looking at doing. So the cross-platform build is actually a huge investment for us. We are doing the whole, you know, Ant and Maven thing and Gradle, and then also making sure we plug into release management so that deployment truly works cross-platform. As well as the Eclipse integration, we want to do some improvements in Eclipse, especially when you are bringing in a Git project into Eclipse. That's an area that we've got to try and smooth and make better. But we want to, as I mentioned earlier, enhance the IntelliJ integration and get that working well. And then the integrations into the platform, so making it more accessible. We're actually doing some changes to the build system, the core of TFS build, so that it can work better with external build systems. So we're adding a new API, which allows an external build system to publish its data back into TFS. So that will then enable us to create a Jenkins plugin which publishes build results back into TFS. So if you're not using our build engine, you still get all the goodness of that feedback loop from requirements to check-in to build to test to deployments. We want to have first-class Sonar support. So Sonar is a very common static code analysis system and DET analyst system for Java people. We want that into Visual Studio Online. And increasingly, as people are moving to distributed version control, which is a trend that we see, obviously, distributed version control systems are really bad at handling binary files because a distributed version control system will copy all of history with it. So if you copy all of history and your history includes different versions of binaries, you've got 20 different versions of a binary file where you probably only wanted one. So what we're seeing is people are refactoring their source code and pulling out binaries into an external binary artifact repository. That's actually a good trend. Like, checking in binaries into source control has never been a great thing anyway to do. You know, source control is good at handling source, hence the name. So checking in binaries can be problematic, but it's the easiest thing to do often. We're seeing more and more people go towards using these external binary repositories like Nexus, Sonatype Nexus, and then Artifactory is another common one. This Maven works this way, so it's very common there. And we also want to make sure, I don't know if you noticed, Microsoft's doing quite a lot of open source nowadays. And so while we still have Coplex, and we're still going to keep Coplex up and running and keep developing Coplex and make sure it's still there, the vast majority of the open source community today is on GitHub, so that's where we put our open source projects, where the community is. And we need to make sure that if you're doing open source in GitHub as part of your application, or if you're consuming open source as your application, then you have really good integration into Visual Studio Online and Team Foundation Server. The final thing that you'll notice, and again, this causes tension, but it's the way we're going, so I'd rather be honest with you, is more and more of our experiences are moving to the web when it makes sense. So we're in the IDE, where it makes sense when you're a developer, but if it's something like managing your agile planning dashboard, well, we build that in the web, and the web is the experience to drag and drop tasks around, because we build that once, and then it's available to everybody, regardless of which IDE you're in. And then we would surface that raw data in Eclipse or Visual Studio, but we build web experiences. Basically, most of the admin experiences went to the web last time around. More and more stuff is going to the web. And that's because every team is responsible for making things open source. Not open source. They are, if it's open source. Every team is responsible for making sure everybody can collaborate with them. Okay. I wanted to leave plenty of time for questions, because people have been asking questions about the whole cross-platform topic while I've been here. So let's have Q&A. We've got 7 minutes. Yes. Okay. So the question was, what do we do for code review cross-platform? Yeah, so what we're doing with code reviews. So we've added, for the Git people, we didn't have code review in TFS 2013. So we added a code review feature for distributed version control, which is pull requests. Those pull requests are available to all versions of TFEC, all licenses, I believe. And I know that there are discussions about also opening up the version control licensing and experience. But to do that, we want to build a good web experience for TFVC, and then it makes sense to open up the licensing as well. I'm not sure in which order those two things are going to be delivered. I can check and get back to you. Manil's just left. He would have known. But yeah, it's definitely something we've heard. And I agree, code review is essential, collaboration. Hopefully around the build time frame, we'll have more announcements about like SKU makeups and which features are going to be in which for the next version. So that's end of April, hopefully. Yes?
Version control, TFS, and
Git. Yes.
You said it can be two projects in one collection can use a different version
code
since when?
So the question was, and I'll bring it. Since when has in now? I'll explain what I said to make sure. I'll bring up the diagram. this picture here. So what I'm saying is two projects, so two team projects in one team project collection, they can use Git or TFVC version control. That's how it's always been since we shipped Git. However, you can't mix TFVC and Git in the same team project. So when you create the team project, you have to decide, is this a centralized version control workflow or a distributed version control workflow? And that was a deliberate, it was a deliberate decision at the time, because distributed version control workflows are very different. The way the source code is structured is different. The way the team works is different. And we wanted that to be a conscious choice for the team project. The feedback we've seen since we've released is actually that workflow is something that we handle at the team level, not the team project level. Team project is too big. Team is where you would like to make that choice. And so we've heard that feedback. We plan on addressing that. We don't have any definite timelines where you'd be able to mix TFVC and Git in the same team project. But what people do today to get around this is that they have a team project with Git, a team project with TFVC, and they can link work items together between the two if they are in the same team project collection. The other feature we don't have today, which we've talked about, is the ability to be able to link a work item from one team project collection to a different team project collection. Again, that's a feature we know we need and we need to invest in. We don't have that yet. Does that make sense? Great. There's another question around. I saw one. Any other questions? Wow. I don't think I've ever finished early in a session in my entire life. Okay. If anybody has got some things and you want to ask me one-on-one rather than in front of everybody, I'm here until after lunch. So I have to go and fly to the Netherlands this afternoon. So if you want to grab me, try and grab me at lunchtime. I'll make sure I'm out there all lunchtime and we can have a chat. Again, thank you so much for your time. It's always a pleasure coming here. And we really do appreciate the feedback. So, yeah, thanks for talking to us. Thanks for coming.